Chapter 50. Theron. Theron woke to the sound of scraping metal. The locking mechanism on his cell door clicked. He rolled onto his side, and the stone floor pushed against his bruised ribs, forcing his breath to catch in his throat as he lay there, waiting. He could hear Azrael stir in the far corner.
"Here we go again."
There was a dull snap as the final pin released. The sound of rusted metal grated on his already raw nerves, as a cell door swung open and three members of the Black Watch stooped their way inside. The first guard held out his torch, providing just enough light for the other two to make their way across the room.
"So, what's on the schedule for today?"
Theron asked, as they each grabbed a stiff arm.
"A nice stroll around the gardens, perhaps? Or maybe some tea by the fountain?"
The guards chuckled as they hefted him to his feet and clapped the iron bracelets around his wrists.
"Guess you'll find out soon enough."
Theron glanced over his shoulder as they marched him towards the open door, hoping to catch a quick glimpse of his cellmate.
"Don't wait up. I might be a while."
The old man shook his head, his face twisting into what Theron believed was a grin, before the light from the torch flickered from view, and they stepped into the narrow hallway beyond. The shuffling of their feet echoed off the hollow interior of the tower corridors as they made their way through dark passages and circular stairwells, winding ever downward, each step driving with it the almost hopeful longing of reaching an end. Suffocating underneath a growing mountain of melancholy, questions resurfaced. Would this be the day he gave in? Would this be the one time he faltered? Would these be the last moments of his pathetic life? Momentarily distracted by another company of guards shutting a nearby door, Theron turned to look at his surroundings. The inner hallways all looked the same, square passageways of stone with doors lining both sides. Theron always knew when he had reached one of the outer corridors, since the doors on one side would be replaced by the occasional arrow slit. There seemed to be an endless supply of cells to fill. He could tell which of the rooms were occupied by the sounds of prolonged suffering wafting eerily from underneath the doors as they passed. Men and women cried out in despair, holding on to what little hope still remained, that one of these days the guards would show a little mercy and drive a sword through their chest, or maybe drop them from the walls of the tower and let them hit the rocks below. Either would be a kindness. It was how Theron felt most of the time. However, he was determined that, as long as he drew breath, he was going to resist. After all, they didn't want him dead. They only wanted him to suffer long enough to agree to join their cause and help them create more of his magic-enhanced weapons. He wouldn't succumb. All he had left was his sense of humor, and he would wield it to the bitter end. He would cut and whack and jab with it until those around him were doubling over under its use. He laughed. He wasn't quite sure why. Maybe he was finally willing to accept his fate. Maybe Azrael's prophetic rantings were somehow taking hold. Or maybe he was just losing his mind.
"So..."
He raised his head, his eyes popping from one guard to the next.
"What does a fella have to do to become a member of the Black Watch, anyway? I hear the pay is pretty good."
His head made a circular motion around the gloomy dungeon walls.
"And just look at these accommodations. You can't get this in the city."
The guard in front of him turned his head as they continued their steady march.
"I'm going to miss you, Smith.
It almost seems a shame to have to break a wit as dry as yours.
From the displaced shadows of the torchlight, the guard's silhouette held one remarkable feature. His schnozzle. Good old nostrils. Someone you can always count on being there when you need him the least. Nostrils stopped in front of a large iron door and pulled a ring of keys from his waist. Perrin recognized the door from the numerous times he had stood waiting, like now, for a similar guard, with a normal-looking nose, of course, to unlock the bolts and swing wide its hinges. Like the mouth of a great dragon, it promised all those who entered a sure and painful end. With a shove from behind, Perrin nearly tumbled down the stone steps toward the Hall of Inquisition below. The sound of the screaming enfolded the small group as they stepped from the enclosed well onto the final landing. Walking down a short hall, they entered a large circular room, cavernous in nature, and surrounded on all sides by pillars of stone. The central floor held a conglomeration of stone tiling that formed a unique image at the center, which Perrin took as the crest of the White Tower. Surrounding the room were 13 doors, each with a guard posted just outside the entrance. Some rooms stood open, others were shut. It didn't take a great imagination to guess what was happening behind the shut ones. The sounds of human agony were unmistakable. In the center of the enclave sat three desks, where the black-robed members of the legate were busy transcribing and documenting whatever information was being retrieved from those rooms with the closed doors. The guards marched him forward.
"Prisoner Ferrin's here for questioning, as you requested, legate."
Nostrils bowed his head in deference, awaiting a response.
"Very well," said the elderly man at the center table.
He paused in his scribbling to take a look at the prisoner. Perrin knew him as Styx. It was the name he had given the old legate after having caught a glimpse of the man's bony arms poking out from beneath his dark robes. They were very similar to a pair of birchwood branches he had played swords with as a boy. After a brief hint of recognition crossed Styx's face, he scanned through some of the papers on his desk. Having found what he was looking for, he gestured to his right.
"Room 11, move along."
"Yes, sir."
The guard standing outside the door bearing a carved 11 in the top turned as they approached and twisted the already inserted key. With a dull snap, he pulled back the latch and opened, leaving plenty of room for Perrin and his armed escort to slip inside. The door whined as it closed behind them, causing Perrin to once again cringe at the sound of rusted metal. Inside, Cheeks was resting on his favorite stool in front of an already filled rack.
"I see you already have company," Perrin said. "I'll just come back at a more convenient time."
He turned to leave, but two of the guards held him in place. Cheeks shifted his weight on his stool and turned to look at Perrin.
"Ah, my dear Smith, you're just in time."
The Inquisitor motioned him forward.
"Come, come, take a seat. You might enjoy watching my work from a different perspective. Perhaps it might give you a greater appreciation for my gifts, yes?"
"I think I've had enough appreciation of your gifts already. How about I take the rest of the day off?"
Cheeks shook with laughter, almost pitching himself backwards from his rickety stool.
"You will be the death of me, Smith."
"If only,"
Perrin scoffed under his breath. No one else in the room had heard him, save Nostrils, and Perrin could have sworn the man had smiled. One of the guards walked him forward and motioned him to the empty seat on the opposite side of the rack. Making a quick pass of the room, Perrin noticed the little healer was nowhere to be seen. Cheeks pushed up from his stool and waddled over to his small table of tools. Lifting the ball-peen hammer, he looked it over and pursed his lips in thought, before glancing in Farron's direction.
You see, pain comes in all shapes and sizes, and since we are all created differently, our tolerance for certain kinds of pain has different levels. For example,
he said, stepping over to the rack,
our friend here has managed to withstand the knife fairly well, at least on the outer parts. But as you know, it's the hidden, protected areas of the body which bring the most pain.
He offered Farron a twisted wink.
Those are, however, the worst places to apply torture. The subject tends to lapse into a state of unconsciousness all too soon after the pain is applied. No, I learned long ago that the most sensitive areas are not always the best to prod. I should like to explain this to you later. But for now,
he said, as he stepped away from the table and walked over to the rack,
I am going to use a different form of discomfort. The knife is rather elegant in its use, slicing asunder our meats, puncturing and probing our inward parts. But with it, you get a searing pain, sharp and relatively confined. However, this,
he continued, stepping in front of the prisoner and raising the hammer,
this is not so confined. It tends to spread throughout the entire limb, like so.
Cheeks swung the hammer downward with speed, force, and precision, connecting the ballpoint tip with the man's kneecap. There was a dull cracking sound, like that of a rotten floorboard giving way under the weight of a heavy step. The man's knee shattered. Farron recoiled under the recognition of what had just been done. Cheeks raised his finger in succession.
One, two, three.
Ah! The poor victim's head bounced backwards off the metal rungs as he screamed in pain.
You see?
Cheeks's smile widened.
There is a time delay before the pain is registered.
Farron had never been forced to witness the torture of another before. He had to admit that, if it hadn't been so appalling, he might have found it a little intriguing. Farron quickly shook his head, as if in doing so he could rid himself of the fleeting thought. The Inquisitor's brow rose.
Hmm?
He dropped back onto his flimsy stool.
Perhaps I should pen a book.
His face lifted, eyes sparkling.
Yes, that's a wonderful idea,
he said as he thumbed his chin.
I could pass on this wealth of information as a learning guide for new inquisitors.
Please, the man begged. I've told you everything I know. Please stop.
Tears poured down the prisoner's cheeks, dripping onto his bare and bleeding chest. Snot was running freely from his nose, and Farron watched the complete and utter collapse of the man's dignity as he cried out to the Inquisitor, to the Creator, to his mother.
I believe I know which two topics I should like to begin with,
Cheeks said, still focused on the possibility of authoring a book. Coming out of his dazed introspection, Cheeks turned his attention back to the helpless prisoner restrained in front of him.
Yes, yes, I believe you,
he said with a flippant wave of his wrist.
You've told me everything you know.
Then I can go.
The poor man sniffed some of the fluid draining down his upper lip.
You are through with me?
Yes, of course.
Oh, thank you, sir, thank you. I have a wife and children. They will surely starve without me.
Cheeks was already lost in thought again. Theron could see the wheels in his head turning. No doubt working out the opening lines to his new book.
Guard!
The latch to the door turned, and the sentry stepped inside.
Yes, sir.
I'm through with this man. I've acquired everything I can. I believe his wielding days are over.
Theron watched as the prisoner's shoulders relaxed at the Inquisitor's words.
Yes, sir. I know now that using magic is evil. I will never do it again.
There was a spark of hope ignited within the man's eyes. Even over the excruciating pain, Theron could see the tears he now shed were stemming from the excited hope of being released.
Yes, that is most certainly true.
Cheeks rose from his seat and walked back to his table of displayed instruments and replaced the hammer within its slot.
Take him for purging.
What?
The prisoner's eyes bulged as his spark of hope was snuffed out and replaced by one of terror.
But you said I was done, that you believed I wouldn't use my magic anymore.
You are correct. You are done. And I know you will not use magic anymore, since we will be ridding you of it.
But what about my wife and child? They will starve.
I guess they should have thought about that before getting involved with a wielder.
Cheeks rolled his tools into a neat bundle and tucked them under his arms.
Now, send Rhea in. I want his injuries mended.
The sadist turned and smiled at the prisoner.
We need him to be strong for the purging process.
After Cheeks left, one of the guards pushed Rhea through the door. Nostrils, not really sure whether he should stay or leave, took up a position to the left of the entranceway. Theron remained on his stool, staring helplessly at the poor wretch in front of him. The man wasn't much older than he was. Though thinned by a lack of food, Theron could still tell he had been a new recruit to the tower. The marks on his body were nowhere near as extensive as his own. The man was obviously not much of a fighter. Pinching the edge of his seat, Theron felt his hackles rise at the thought of the man's supposed lack of strength. How could he be so willing to give in? He wondered. Realizing his anger was being channeled in the wrong direction, and feeling more than a little uncomfortable at just sitting there watching the man's agony like an audience at a tinker show, Theron left his seat and walked to the far wall, keeping his eyes on the little healer as she entered. Rhea never once looked in his direction as she stepped onto the base of the rack and laid her hands on the man's wounds. Her hands were glowing, and Theron recognized the shuddering effect of her magic as it forced its way through the prisoner's body. Eyes widening, neck stiffening, sharp inhale, and then complete relaxation as the broken bones and torn flesh worked to knit themselves back together. As Theron watched the man, he found himself wishing there was something he could do for him. But he knew better than to get involved. You get involved, and it might be you heading to the purging chamber instead of him. Theron watched as Rhea finished her work on the man's knee and slunk onto the nearby stool.
Please help me,
the man begged, but the healer kept her eyes on her feet as she struggled to maintain a stable breath. She was clearly exhausted. Ferrin wondered how many others Rhea had been forced to heal before this man.
Nostrils knocked on the door, alerting the guard outside that they were ready to take the unfortunate soul off for purging, whatever that was. The door opened, and the second guard stuck his head in.
He's ready.
Nostril's voice held a tinge of sympathy as he helped the guard unshackle the man and drag him toward the doorway, while his feet scrambled to try blocking his forward motion.
Please have mercy. My wife, my child, they'll starve. Please.
The second guard punched into the side of the man's gut, causing him to halt his struggling and go limp. A trail of tears and light whimpering marked their passage as they slid him through the doorway and beyond. With the sound of the lock being snapped back into place, Theron stood there, motionless, haunted by the man's lingering pleas of desperation. Glancing around the room, Theron found himself in the unique position of communicating with Rhea, without the worry of prying eyes and ears. He had to wonder why they had been left alone. Weren't the Inquisitors worried he would try to escape? But then he realized it would have been a rather impossible task, to say the least, even if he used Rhea's transferal stone to release the metal locks and open the door. What then? He was deep underground, and the main room held dozens of well-trained guards, not to mention the legates and Inquisitors. And even if he was somehow able to manipulate the metal in their blades, the guards were still more than capable of overpowering two underfed prisoners with their bare hands. For the first time, he was at a loss for words. The only sound was the flickering of the torches positioned on either side of the room. The soft crackling of their flames produced a rather calming effect. He watched Rhea's chest lift and fall under the weight of her struggling breath. Sitting on the Inquisitor's stool, she held herself up by the edges, knuckles white under the strain. Perrin could tell she was having difficulty just managing to stay upright.
Are you all right? Of course she's not all right, you imbecile. She's been locked in the White Tower and forced to watch humans being carved on every day. What a stupid question.
I mean, is there anything I can get you?
Ferrin rolled his eyes. What am I possibly going to get her?
Deciding his best course of action was to overlook his two previous attempts at simple banter, he moved on.
Do you remember me? My name is Ferrin.
Silence.
Where are you from?
More silence.
All right. Not exactly the booming conversationalist.
I'm from Rowan, he offered. I own, he frowned, or I guess used to own, a small swordsmithy. It wasn't exactly Central Square. In fact, he chuckled, it wasn't exactly much at all. But I had plenty of business, and the work was fun. Have you ever been to Rowan?
She shook her head. Well, that's a start.
It's a beautiful place to live, nestled there between the Northern Heights and Lake Berrien.
Leaning with his back against the wall and one knee bent with his foot propped for balance, Ferrin closed his eyes and let his descriptions take flight.
The mountains are capped in snow all year round, and the changing of the leaves during the fall adds such a contrast to the blue waters that it takes your breath away. During the summer, I used to take a skiff out on the lake and just float around for hours. There's no place quite as peaceful. Paddle out far enough, and the only sounds you'll hear are the waves lapping against the sides of the boat.
He took a deep breath and exhaled, hoping to release some of the tension and unease from his current situation.
It's a wonderful place to live.
Opening his eyes, he was surprised to find her staring at him.
Her pale green eyes were filled with curiosity and something else, which he couldn't quite put a finger on. He smiled.
She looked away.